Double Take is an extension of the award-winning movie review show Cinema Classics, which airs Thursdays at 8.01 p.m. on WCBE 90.5 FM, Columbus, Ohio. Produced and hosted by John DeSando, this podcast version features additional content and discussion with guests. Double Take is listed by FeedSpot as one of the top 10 movie podcasts on NPR.
Ah, that's so sweet. I'm John DeSando.
And I'm KG Klein.
And this is Double Take. Any number of times I've gone to the Bourbon Trail in Kentucky. We're broadcasting from Columbus, Ohio, so it's only a few hours to go there. And frequently, I'll stop at Pleasant Hill.
Shaker Village in Pleasant Hills. I know it well. My Harry Potter fans have used that place a number of times for events.
We have a movie today that you have recommended, and I applaud you because I think it's a heavy-duty movie.
It is called The Testament of Ann Lee.
Yeah, ooh.
One of the most interesting movies, John, to come out in the last year or two. And this is a 2025 movie. It's just now reaching theaters in Columbus. But, oh, what a rich and educational and fulfilling movie. Ann Lee was the founder of the Shaker movement. They came out of the Quaker movement in the late 1700s. And they came to America and founded Shaker Villages throughout New England and then as far west as Ohio. We best know them for their furniture and the few little remnant villages that dot around the New England and around here. There was a very fascinating story because the Shakers were the only Christian sect to be founded by a woman who proclaimed herself to be the second coming of Jesus. By her being the second coming, Jesus was both male and female. So the Shaker sect is the only Christian sect that views men and women completely on an equal level, and in fact, I would say probably elevates women even just a hair above men, because the Shaker sect was about 70% women, even during its peak when there was only about 6,000 people. It was mostly women.
Wrongheaded as they were, they have two basic principles that I see from this movie. The first one is they're pacifists.
They're pacifists. Yeah. They did not participate in drafts. Right, right. They did not go to war in the Civil War or the Revolutionary War.
Right, yeah.
Or World War II. And of course, I know where you're going with the other one.
Yeah, right. And what they were thinking when they banned sexual relations is unbelievable to me.
Well, this is one of the strengths of this movie. Despite this movie having a strong feminist angle, it never loses its objectivity. And the director, Mona Fastfold, does a wonderful job of introducing to us the clues of why Ann Lee incorporated celibacy, no marriage, into her religion, into her take on Christianity.
Well, I thought it was so fascinating. The trigger on that was seeing her parents
as a child living in a one-room home and seeing her parents having relations and finding that disturbing.
And let's throw into that pot the fact that she lost four kids.
Well, she married a very abusive man, and she had four children, all of whom died before the age of one. Obviously, there's a lot of trauma going on here with her connection to sexuality, her connection to having children. And Mona Fastfold does a fascinating job of giving us insights into this so we can piece together the clues of where Ann Lee's head was when she had these visions that created the Shaker.
I got to applaud it. As much as I'm a big supporter of sexual relations, it complicates things. So she must have sensed if she could get rid of that, maybe she'd have a straighter path to God. But after all, she married God.
That's what she called. Well, she was already married. The movie gets a little bit wrong. The movie portrays her as falling in love with this blacksmith and marrying him. In reality, she was set up in an arranged marriage by her father when she was 15.
And who is playing this?
This is our own Amanda Seyfried,
right,
who we have just seen in theaters right now with The Housemaid, a great movie. We reviewed that and is doing gangbuster business, and now she's got two movies playing in theaters simultaneously.
Now, if you don't know who she is, she's got the biggest eyes in the industry.
She is doing very well for herself, but yes, if you're interested in the Shakers of the 1800s, the ones that made the Shaker furniture and had Shaker Village, this is not a movie about this. This is an origin story. This is about the person of Ann Lee leading up to the founding of the movement, or traveling with her companions to America and establishing the Shaker movement in the United States up to the late 1700s. You're not going to see the 1800s, all these big villages.
What you're going to feel is the contemporary references to faith and tolerance and particularly tolerance. We're growing to be intolerant considerably.
Faith, tolerance, and I would also say gender issues.
Yes.
Because very, very much this sect was criticized for allowing women to preach. She was considered a heretic, and a heretic is somebody who challenges the established church. As she was there in England, running into Church of England and interrupting services and proclaiming herself as the second coming of Christ. And not only was this heretical for claiming you're the second coming of Christ, but the fact that she was a woman made it doubly so.
Oh, yes. And I'll remember a few months ago when you did a beautiful little discourse on the value of movies for history.
Oh, well, thank you. Yes.
Yeah, it struck me again as I watched this. I'm being immersed in this culture, which I've seen only from far away from their beautiful buildings down in Pleasant Hill in Kentucky. Now, however, the beauty of a movie like this is that I'm there.
Yeah. This movie takes you to this time, to the 1760s, 1770s, immerses you completely in it. So it's not just about the Shakers. It's about America, New England, in the 1760s, during the Revolutionary War. But what struggles were they facing? What did the world look like? And this movie, for all the world, reminds me of a very famous Swedish movie called The Immigrants, about a four-hour movie about Swedish immigrants coming to the United States. Fastvold, being Norwegian, I'm sure has seen this movie, and you can tell the influences. I would say this movie is a combination of The Immigrants and Women Talking, the movie from about 3 years ago.
Oh, good one, yeah.
Yeah, which was about women in a religious sect being victimized by the men.
One of the things that the director does is to soft pedal their feelings and their ambition. It even keels, as you were talking about the between men and women. She is the leader. She's called mother. But yet, it doesn't seem strident to me, which I'm always careful about. Mm-hmm. Don't hit me over the head, please. I got it. And she just believes what she says. She is the new Christ, or whatever they would call
her. She believes it completely, and everybody else believes it as well. But this is not a Monty Python's Life of Brian, where they're making fun of people who follow people blindly.
Yes, good one, yeah.
Yeah, this is a movie about people who find something that they're missing in their life in Anne Lee, because Anne Lee was an uneducated woman. She was raised by a blacksmith's family in a one-room house, and yet she found in this new sect that was forming called the Shaking Quakers something that she could latch onto. And then when she became persecuted about this, she began having these visions, and these visions proclaimed her as the second coming of Christ. People followed her on this. They followed her across the Atlantic Ocean to establish this church in America.
My only complaint about this totally immersive film is that I lose some of the language because of the accents.
The British accents,
they're coming from Manchester, they're coming from working class, and it isn't often easy for me to pick up that, and I'm a word guy, and it drives me crazy.
But they did such a nice job with this. The casting is wonderful. The sets are fantastic.
Oh.
They take you right into it. And what I really give Fastvold a lot of credit for is she does not take us to the point where we feel that Anne Lee has dementia or she is dangerously psychotic. We see the person that her followers are latched onto and embracing, but we also, through the origin, we see the history that led to this person. So we're allowed to make a decision for ourselves. Was this woman really an inspired preacher, or was she a woman who was the victim of the men around her and the experiences of her life and incorporated those into her own passions?
Well, could you explain to me why this is a musical?
I don't think it is a musical.
All right.
I know other critics are saying this is a musical. I don't think it is, because all of the music that we're hearing in this movie is traditional Shaker hymns, and they're being sung as part of prayer services or religious services or daily activities where the Shakers would have sung.
Competitive with Pilates, is that because they can go all day with these singing.
Oh, yes.
And shaking and dancing.
All very historically accurate. Fastfold, a lot of credit for managing to maintain her objectivity while telling this very important feminist story. I would say this is an important work of feminist cinema from the same director who gave us World to Come a couple of years ago, the story of the two lesbian pioneer women.
And another story of ambition, Brutalist.
Well, Brutalist she co-wrote, and then her partner, Brady Corbett, directed that.
Yeah. All right, K.G. Klein. It's called The Testament of Anne Lee. What do you suggest?
I suggest see it. It's one of the best things in theaters right now. You might have to search a little bit for it. Not every theater is playing it. It's a really fascinating movie that you're going to find a lot to talk about afterwards.
And I'll look forward to be streaming someday in the future so I can catch all of the dialogue.
Oh, probably very soon.
Well, as we're talking about this musical, non-musical, how about Amanda Seyfried? Do you remember anything that she's been in?
Well, The Housemaid, of course.
The Housemaid this year. What the House, a great juxtaposition.
I mean, that's really brought her to prominence, and I can't recall her before that. Well, my memory.
Yeah, Mamma Mia.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And she sings. She shows that she
sings.
Can sing.
Yeah, I'm so distracted by Cher in that I think I might have managed to overlook her.
And there are others. Mean Girls.
Oh, okay.
2014.
Yes, she was in that. Okay.
That's about 12 years ago.
That's going back a little ways.
Gosh, she must have been a babe.
Great actresses came out of that movie.
Les Mis.
She was in Les Mis?
Who did
she? Oh, she was Cosette. No kidding.
Can you believe that?
Oh, my gosh. Well, have times have changed. Yeah.
She's very youthful, very expressive. She was on maybe Letterman a while ago.
Okay.
And she was exclaiming how she had to have a drink before and that she's a bit addicted to scotch or something.
Oh, good for her.
Oh, I know. She was just really delightfully
open. You can't go wrong
open.
Being addicted to scotch.
I know. Showing good. How about any other utopian movies? I've got one. Maybe my favorite, Metropolis.
1929.
You're close. 1927.
27, yeah. Fritz Lang's Metropolis. The establishing film, science fiction cinema.
The wealthy on top and the poor underground.
All about class systems and science and how science is both going to be our salvation and also our demise.
Do you remember one was utopian based, I thought? In 1976, you might not remember this one, Logan's Run.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Oh, you
Michael
do?
York. Oh, yes.
Yes.
Michael York and a very, very Alec Guinness spouting the lines of T.S. Eliot's Old Possum's Book of Practical Cats. I love that movie. That was one of the last of the 70s science fiction films before Star Wars came out and reinvented
and
the science
fiction. Yeah.
For that, you have very hardcore science fiction films. And when I say hardcore, the science is accurate. They're hard themes, Logan's Run, and before that you had Silent Running, 2001 A Space Odyssey. These films took themselves seriously, and then Star Wars comes out and does fantasy space opera, and suddenly science fiction has turned on its end.
Well, I was always intrigued by the premise of Logan Run, is that you had only a certain number of years to live.
You could live to 30.
You had to try to figure out a way of living longer, and that was the run.
Trying to get to a place called Sanctuary. You know, in the movie, we find out Sanctuary doesn't exist, but in the book, curiously, Sanctuary did exist.
All right, yeah.
So a very, very different take on the same subject.
Parallel to our desire to live forever, which you can't do. Parallel to the struggles we have with people who want to get out of the way when we have to run.
And Logan's Run is one of the great post-nuclear war films.
Yeah.
In the 70s, we saw a lot of those. Damnation Alley came out roughly the same time.
Another one about 14 years ago, Minority Report.
Minority Report, another great dystopian future.
When I'm researching it for utopian, I might as well be researching it for dystopian.
Dystopian, yeah. Minority Report, Oblivion, a long string of Tom Cruise science fiction films that all came out boom, 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 because it seemed like the perfect genre for him.
There's one that I discovered, and I have to say, I know nothing about The Island. In 2005, a character called Lincoln Six Echo struggles with life in a carefully controlled environment with a hope that he will win a lottery and be chosen to go to the island, the last contagion-free place on Earth.
No.
I just thought it resonated with our COVID concern. And so many of these are wishing to extend our life beyond maybe what fate wishes it to. And so in a utopian way. It's not going to exist. All these utopian stories end up not well for most of them.
Usually they're trying to make a point about how what one person conceives to be utopia is another person's dystopia. Whether we're talking about 1984 or we're talking about Soylent Green, or Planet of the Apes, for that matter. These are all the idea of one, in Planet of the Apes, what is one person's paradise is human beings' demise.
Exactly. They're full of irony. Forbidden Planet is a favorite of mine. But I was a very young man, much enthralled by Anne Francis. Leslie Nielsen, if you remember, was the top dog in this movie. What I thought so fascinating about Forbidden Planet is the monster they're fighting is actually inside them.
The monster from the id, which is the fears that all of us have made manifest and becoming its own killing device, based on Shakespeare's The Tempest.
So back to our film for today, which is The Testament of Anne Lee. I can't explain exactly why I'm so drawn to this, except for its historicity, except for the authenticity of the performance. Amanda's performance is just exceptional.
Amanda is exceptional, and let's not forget Thomasine McKenzie playing Anne's best friend.
Yes,
the actress
who she narrates, right?
Who she narrates, the actress that we best know for playing the teenage Jewish girl in Jojo Rabbit. Fantastic performance.
I love bringing up Jojo Rabbit.
I just love that movie. Thomasine McKenzie, somebody I'm always watching out for.
Yes.
There's a couple of actresses that usually now get B character roles. I try to see their films whenever they come out because I'm always going to see a great performance. I want to go back to Fast Fold for just a moment here,
sure.
Because this is a Norwegian woman, and Norway, interestingly, is the most feminist nation in the world. It's been ranked that by a number of organizations. Okay. It has more women in CEOs than any other country. Women express that they have the highest standard of living in Norway than any other country. So we would expect a Norwegian woman director to have feminist themes. Mm-hmm. And this is exactly what she does with Anne Lee and what she did with World to Come as well. It's interesting when you see stories about women characters, particularly women in positions of authority, that are done by men. And then the same stories when they're directed and written by women, they're very, very different. For instance, Her World to Come, lesbian story about two pioneer women.
And not hardcore lesbian.
Not hardcore, no. Because there's very almost no sex scenes in it. It's very brief and told in retrospect.
Yes.
It's all about the emotional connection between these two women.
The support they give each other.
And the support they give each other. And the acceptance and tolerance of one another and reinforcement. But when you see a man director do a lesbian movie like Blue is the Warmest Color, what do we have? We have a lot of sex, a lot of nudity, and claims by the cast that they were exploited. It is really interesting to see women's cinema when it's being written and directed by a woman versus women's cinema when it's being written and directed by a man, because they're very, very different.
There are a few establishments left in the world, I think. The one we mentioned earlier down in Pleasant Hill, down in Kentucky. And there's another one in New York State.
Oh, you talked about Shaker settlements?
Yeah, right.
Yes. There's three, I think, in New York State. And there's one at Harvard, just outside of Harvard.
Harvard, Massachusetts.
Harvard, Massachusetts.
Right.
Yeah, there's one of the early ones.
I heard there's one, a small one in New Hampshire.
There's a small one in New Hampshire, and there's actually a fairly good-sized one in the extreme southwestern corner of Ohio, right on the Indiana border. It's the second largest surviving building-wise settlement after
Shaker
Village.
That's not what I'm talking about, Pleasant Hill?
Pleasant Hill's in Kentucky.
Yeah.
This one is in Ohio. Yeah, and it's right on the Indiana border in the extreme corner of Ohio there. And I think it's got 24 surviving buildings.
Really?
But Shaker Village is the big one. It's got 34 buildings. And I'll give Shaker Village a lot of credit.
Where?
In Kentucky.
Shaker Village
in Kentucky. Because every other settlement is now either torn down or it's a sort of a little living museum. So they run it a little bit like Colonial Williamsburg. But Shaker Village in Pleasant Hills, Kentucky, has decided instead, let's take these amazing buildings and turn them into a massive bed and breakfast complex. So you can now go to Shaker Village in Pleasant Hills and stay in a room that was built in 1830, and with the creaking floors and the walls a foot thick, and it's like no other experience on Earth. It's our equivalent of staying at a castle.
You can see them do their dancing and singing.
You can see that, reenactments of it. You can see some of the herbology.
Right.
Because the Shakers, once they got into the 1840s and 1850s and were peaking, they were the first ones to package seed packets in little envelopes and sell herb seeds in communities. And they start, so Burpee and all the other companies go back to the Shakers.
Oh, I love seeing them make their little containers, putting the band around them and taking such care with what they did, and hanging their chairs up on the
wall. Hanging the chairs up, because everything in a place for everything and everything in its place. One of the things I find fascinating is a lot of their hymns referred to, we love our mother. We love the mother.
Yes.
So this is a Christian sect that was worshiping a female deity.
Yes.
A female version of God. We've not seen that before or since. But how did this sect ever get to 6,000 people? And I can answer that a little bit. Even though they were not allowed to marry or have kids, it became a very attractive thing, because if you joined a Shaker Village and you were married, your marriage was immediately annulled.
Correct.
So you were no longer married. If you came into the Shakers as a married couple with children, your children joined a group nursery that other people helped take care of. Everybody got educated, so there was 100% literacy, 100% employment. Everybody was well fed. Everybody got a good night's rest. Everybody had a sense of purpose. But why was it 70% women in these Shaker villages?
Probably because they've been abused their whole lives.
Exactly. You nailed it. The sect, because you could enter and your marriage was now annulled, women who were the victims of domestic abuse, had horrible spouses, they could join a Shaker sect, and there was no stigma of divorce. Their marriage was annulled. They joined a colony that was 70% women that supported one another, where the men had their jobs, the women had their jobs, and that abusive marriage was gone. Often the man didn't join. The man went his own separate way, and the woman joined. And it became a refuge for abused and beaten women.
And Ann Lee's husband, who became very frustrated, divorced her.
After they got to the United States, once he realized she was not going to turn from this permanent celibacy, he just walked out on her. It wasn't quite what you saw in the movie, but okay. He just walked out on her and was never seen again. He married somebody else and lived the rest of his life in New York City.
Listen, this is a great movie. Amanda is a terrific Ann Lee.
Yeah.
Right down to the end, that simple little casket.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Now, the only thing I want to point out, there is one thing that they do get very historically wrong, and that's that Ann Lee was never sexually assaulted as she was making the rounds of the other villages trying to recruit people, as is depicted in the film.
Yeah.
She did most likely die of a fractured skull
from
beatings.
She had a cracked skull.
She had a cracked skull. And she and other members of the sect, when they're going out trying to recruit people to join, were frequently beaten. But that one scene I found very disturbing where she's sexually assaulted. No, there's no historical background to that.
But there are an awful lot of commentary on any age at any time of intolerance.
Yes.
And we're certainly going through a period which is very intolerant. And this is a good movie to see for that. K.G. Klein, it's the testament of Ann Lee. What do you recommend?
Oh, go see this movie. It's the best thing playing right now. And if you do miss it, it's going to show up on streaming pretty soon.
It will be.
And if you're interested in feminist cinema, this is one of the best pieces of feminist cinema to come out in the last four or five years.
You come out feeling good about this.
Yeah. You come out feeling educated.
Yes.
And I think that's one of the best feelings in the world.